Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, and ownership, especially for real estate agents and realtors. Hey, learn from the experts. This is free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with United Country Real Estate, Sutton Properties, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin, this morning. Good morning, Teresa.
Hi.
How are you?
I am awesome.
Teresa's one of our agents, so I'm the professor and she's the student, and our guest you guys are going to enjoy today is our expert. Buying or selling homes, land or farms, or need of an auction in western Piedmont, North Carolina, or southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our office is at 102 East Main Street next to BB&T Bank in downtown Palo Mountain, North Carolina. Please make a note of our changes. Our new company website is www.allsuttonproperties.com. That's A-L-L-S-U-T-T-O-N properties.com. This show is dedicated to the Realtors Land Institute, our staff, and our members. A program note, Dr. Barbie asked the doctor's show will now follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. So stay tuned. Don't turn off. Don't go anywhere. Dr. Barbie always has something good to talk about. Hey, thanks to our sponsor, LandHub.com. Are you looking to buy or sell land? LandHub.com previews thousands of properties nationwide. That's LandHub.com. Hey, our guest today is Tom Howard. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Moultonboro, New Hampshire.
Moultonboro, New Hampshire. I love your accent. Teresa, what do you think about it?
I knew that's why you invited me to be on here.
Definitely.
My brother friends from State of Maine, Phil McPhail and Rick Dario.
This is better than the Saturday Night Live. But Tom's a fellow accredited land consultant. I got the privilege of meeting at one of our land conferences. I think it was in Arizona a couple years ago. And wanted to have you on the show, and I want you to tell our listening audience about that beautiful state of New Hampshire, okay? You're an accredited land consultant. You're also a GRI, which is the Graduates Realtors Institute, and a CBR. What's the acronym for CBR?
Certified Buyer Representative.
That's what I thought. So you represent them buyers first class, and you're the principal broker of New Hampshire Conservation Real Estate. And so you're it, huh? There you go.
For real estate.
How long you been in real estate, Tom?
How long have I been in?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, 33 years.
Well, you ought to know what you're doing by now. Teresa thinks she knows it all, but she doesn't.
No, I know I don't know it
what?
All. No, I'm smart enough to know I don't know it all.
You'll never know it all in this business. Like, right, Tom?
That's right.
But your resume is about 12 pages, but let me hit a few highlights so our guests know who we're talking about. And I love your website, which is
nhconservationrealestate.com.
And it's a great website. You've done a good job with it. But your goal is to utilize my professionalism, experience, and knowledge to assist clients with a wide variety of conservation-related real estate transactions and to leave a beautiful place in my wake. What a great goal. And that's one of the things, if you don't mind, Tom, you've got extensive background, as you'll see when I talk about your resume here, in conservation easement and management and park and recreations. You're also an Eagle Scout, as I am as well. So congratulations on that. But you went to the University of Maine, got a BS in, with high distinction in recreation and park management in 1979. You did coursework in geology, legal regulations, and environmental biology, wildlife management, forestry recreation management, soil science, land resource economics, recreation and park management, ecology, park planning, design, public speaking, advanced composition, and public administration. You covered it all there. Wow.
Well, the short story is that I started off my career at Bushley Tech in Massachusetts and spent 2 years as a math and computer science major and decided I'd prefer to spend the rest of my working life outdoors. scores. So I transferred up to my home state, University of Maine, got into recreation parks management because of the broad aspect of the program, as you noted, a lot of natural resource coursework, and that's what led me in that direction. Subsequently, as a result, my first career was directly in recreation and parks management as director of parks and facilities in Meredith, New Hampshire, just about 10 miles from where I live.
Wow. How does that background help you in real estate land brokerage?
it's what we do on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, and they talk to each other, too. I did a whole show on talking trees and flora, talking to each other through the root system. It's quite fabulous. But we're all connected, as we know, through the universe, every bit of it. And how long have you been a member of the Realtors Land Institute?
Well, I got my ALC, my Accredited Land Consultant Designation, in 2015.
Right.
5 years. I've been a member of the Institute for a couple of years longer than that. As you know, it takes time and effort.
Oh, it does. Yeah. It's quite a program. Our website, by the way, is www.rliland.com. So if you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in the United States, definitely go to that website first. Find yourself an accredited land consultant. There's, Tom, I think, a little over 500 of us in the United States that carry that designation. And with about 1,300 members, but I think there's like two of you guys in the New Hampshire area. It's
I was just going to chime in that you talk about 500, but up here in the Northeast, there are only five or six of us. As I say, my associates up in Maine, a couple of fellows in Vermont, and one that I'm aware of in Massachusetts, besides myself. So, and there's a variety of reasons. We won't go into that. It kind of trends on
your
no politics.
Yeah, no politics, but
including the realtor organization.
Exactly, but you know, we're a small organization, but our education is par none with our 10 classes. Actually, Tom, I've been privileged to teach our base required course, Land 101, 16-hour, 2-day course, all over the United States. It came out in Washington, D.C. at our mid-year back in 2003, and I was attending it, and when I was setting up my reservations, they told me if I'd come a day early and sit through this new class, or a light class, I'd be qualified to teach it. Hell, I've never taught Sunday school, but I've been muddling through it now since 2003 for our chapters, which we have 18 around the country all these years, and then I have the only class, it's 4-hour CE, for the North Carolina Real Estate Commission called Introduction to Land Brokers. We have 111,000 real estate licensed agents in this state. How many do you guys have in New Hampshire?
Licensees are somewhere in the vicinity of 12,000. The realtor organization is something around 7,000 to 8,000.
Right. So that's appropriate for what the landmass that you guys cover in your population, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. Go ahead.
On that education line, I too have done a little instruction. We, in coordination with the University of New Hampshire Cooperative Extension Service, we presented a class called Conservation Easements for Basics for Real Estate Professionals. And it's a continuing education. We were able to secure credits for not only real estate licensees, but also appraisers, also foresters, all wrapped into one 3-hour course.
Wow.
So I'm pretty familiar with that. You know, Realtor 101.
Yes, sir.
Or Land 101.
Is that an active course now, or is that just a one-timesy?
Well, we did it over a period of 2 years. We did several iterations, and then we redid several areas last. Tried to move geographically, of course, keep it convenient to the membership. And so we don't have it ongoing right now, but we do anticipate that we will.
Yeah, I hope you do.
Re-energize it every couple of years and go through the process. We've had several hundred brokers now who have achieved those continuing ed units through that course.
Perfect. Yeah, please do that because I'm lonely. I'm the only land instructor for the real estate industry other than RLI classes, and I'm lonely out there. I'm hoping that hopefully through this radio show and contacts we'll get more land classes for our real estate agents. The public doesn't know this, but they think just because you got that little R on your lapel, that little blue R, or even the red R, that we know how to do all this stuff like commercial and property management and international real estate. But we really don't unless we take advanced training and join organizations like the Realtors Land Institute, where we now become specialists in that vocation. So that's the truth.
Right there. I served education Realtor Land Institute. So for those brokers out there listening to this show, I can't express enough what you just stated, that it's very important to get that specialized education, because the ALC, those letters after your name, they mean a lot to us at home. But what means more is what you the knowledge you gained in achieving those letters.
We leave a lot of money on the table if you don't know what you're doing, and of course you don't have the best negotiator on the buy side without a good agent that has experience and understands how to play the game. And if you want to make money or save money, you better call me or Teresa in this market area and call Tom up in his area. And like I said, go to www.rliland.net and you'll find agents. They may not have their ALC, but they're in the process of getting educated and have a whole lot more experience and education than those that haven't had any. So that's just a word to the wise. One of the things I wanted, Teresa and I wanted to get into today with you, Tom, is talking about conservation, not only conservation easements, but just the concept of conservation and your background in that. And we'll get into it here in a little bit. But with the University of New Hampshire, the Cooperative Extension Agriculture Natural Resource Business Institute, I'd like you to expel on that here in a little bit. And then you also work with New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services, Land Resource Management. And you've had just quite an extensive, you've written quite a few articles. You were at the group, the Land Protection Specialists. We'd like to know a little bit about that organization. And then you were in the Lake Regions Conservation Trust, Conservation Management. And then a little bit of experience about park and recreation, because that's something I enjoy. We've got a beautiful park here in our area with over 170 acres and trails and frisbee golf and ball fields and a nice rec center for a little town of 1,200 people. But those are some of the things that would be nice if we could get into here in a little bit. You've also been a member of the New Hampshire Association of Realtors. You were on the Public Policy Committee and, of course, Board of Directors. I've been on our RLI chapter board. I joined in 1998, and I'm still on the board. I've been on it every year. But I enjoy giving back and helping. And that's one thing about the realtors around the country. If you ever need help, I don't care. It doesn't have to do with real estate. Contact a good realtor. We love helping people. We're professional problem solvers, aren't we, Teresa?
Yep.
Do you solve any problems this morning?
Yes.
Good. All right. See, you did your job. You also were awarded the Realtor of the Year back in 97 as part of your board, which is congratulations on that. That's quite an honor. And you were with the Lake Region Conservancy Trust, Board of Trustees, for 6 years, it looks like, maybe a little bit longer. So you're involved with the Boy Scouts. We mentioned that you were an Eagle Scout as an adult leader, and thank you for that contribution. Being a fellow Eagle Scout. So you got quite a good background there, and I can't wait for us to dive into it here in a minute and get going.
As you say, that's a long resume, but I
didn't even finish it.
Longevity.
But anyway, our guest today is Tom Howard, and this is Let's Talk Land. Thank you to our sponsor, LandHub.com, sell your land and land of your dreams.
So I am seeing here that New Hampshire has like some, it's like number three with crime rate. It's got really low crime rate. And is it true that they have no income tax and no sales tax?
There are no general sales tax or income tax. There are some taxes that look a lot like it. And there is a tax on interest and dividends. So that's one thing when folks are looking to invest in property up here. We like to make sure that they're conversant in that, that they don't think that they're going to avoid interest and dividends taxes on investments up here. But your general comment about no general sales tax or income tax, that is correct. That means that we support largely through personal property tax at the local level, which comes with its own challenges, shall we say. Mm. And we also have one of the highest real estate transfer taxes in the United States. But in a real estate transaction, of course, that's pennies on the dollar. So it's not a huge impact, but it is. We especially in talking about public policy in the state level, we like to keep our eye on that.
Well, it also says here that you've got excellent schools and excellent health care. So I guess that tax system must work for you guys.
Works pretty well, that's for sure. And no doubt that our health care is very good. Our schools are very good. As I mentioned, the local property tax is something that presents a challenge to some communities. So community to community, you can see a wide variation because of our reliance on the local property tax.
So is there a good vacation spot in New Hampshire?
The whole state is a good vacation spot.
Sounds good.
I live in Moultonboro, right dead central in the state, and about 5 minutes away from Lake Winnipesaukee, which is a major blank space on a map. 44,000 acres of water in that lake alone. We have 1,300 lakes and ponds in New Hampshire with 40,000 miles of rivers and streams.
Wow.
And that equates to about 115,000 acres of surface water. We have the White Mountain National Forest, which, of course, 750,000 acres. One of the most visited national forests in the country. And so we have a wide variety of areas. Even have 18 miles, big 18 miles of sea coast stuck in between the expansive Maine coast and Massachusetts. And we also have a more mountainous region over in the western part of the state. So there's people vacation in just about all the areas in New Hampshire.
So it says here we've got the White Mountain State Mountain Range.
Yeah. Well, we're best known as the Granite State, and the White Mountains do go through, go straight across the state. And as I say, the White Mountain National Forest is over 700,000 acres, so it's easy to get from. For instance, I've just listed a property that's just above the National Forest up north in Bethlehem, New Hampshire. And earlier this year, I was working in the sea. So it's a very easy state because of our size to get around. I do business throughout the state and also now in the southwestern part of Maine.
So it sounds like there might be varying weather in that area. Are we talking about snow in some parts and swimming in others, or year-round, or how does the weather change in that area?
Yeah, probably not quite that dramatic, but definitely from one area to another. And I just mentioned that I had a listing in Bethlehem, and that's up through Franconia Notch State Park, where the old man in the mountain used to be before he fell off the ledge.
Oh.
That was a granite structure that was very well known. It's actually on our quarter. You're familiar with the state quarters that were done a few years ago. Our emblem was the old man in the mountain. Unfortunately, the engineering on him had been man-made for for decades, and finally Mother Nature won the battle. But anyway, that particular area is well known for having one set of weather on one side, and then when you drive through the state park, you can drive into something totally different on the other side. So it gets to your point of how the areas are different. We do have a vast elevation change, of course, given that we have both Seacoast and Mount Washington, which is elevation 6,200 feet. So that's a pretty broad range in the state. And we see probably, I think on average, 4 feet of snow. But, of course, that's not all dumped at once. And it comes and it goes away and it comes back again. So, nice change of seasons up here. Fall is my favorite. Foliage season and the cool nights and beautiful crisp air and during the day. Definitely get all four seasons here. If you like that, great. If not, you'll want to find somewhere else to go for winter.
Oh, I love that. It sounds like I need to come visit New Hampshire.
Well, get in your car and head out.
That's great.
Have you ever been to North Carolina?
I have been to North Carolina, but it was for a business trip, and I was in one spot for quite a while and didn't really get to get around the state.
Well, come on back. You're always welcome.
All right. Thanks.
Well, I mean, Lou's handed me something. I don't know what he's trying to get me to.
Well, it's just something in Wikipedia. New Hampshire is the state of in the New England region of the northeastern United States. It's bordered by Massachusetts in the south, Vermont to the west, Maine, and the Atlantic Ocean in the east. And, of course, it touches the Canadian province of Quebec. And it's the fifth smallest area, but it's the 10th least populated state in the United States. So
I didn't realize New Hampshire bordered Canada.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ask Tom. He'll tell you.
Yeah, we have Quebec border. That's sure, right? As Lou mentioned, at the Realtor Land Conference in Tucson, Arizona, 5 years ago, I was awarded my ALC designation, and at that time, they were allowing the ALCs to give a five-minute little elevator speech at our banquet, which was kind of fun. I recall that I mentioned that with the recognition that our state is smaller than many of the counties in some of those western states, I did acknowledge, too, that we have five rivers at one point in the history of industry were spinning more than 80% of the spindles in the industrial United States. So, as I mentioned before, with all those rivers we have, they were importance to the development of the United States industrial standpoint.
Yeah, you guys were one of the top producers of cloth and cotton at one time.
Yes, Manchester, being the largest city, is on the Merrimack River, and there are many mills now have repurposed down there, but very heavily towards technology. And it's become quite a technological hub for research and development in particular. But those old mills were, as you say, they were spinning out textiles.
Yeah, we thought the South was the textile part, but I never know that. See, that's what we learn when we listen to Let's Talk Land. We find out all kinds of things. Let's talk about real estate for a second. My vision of the New England states is not so many permanent residents, but that you have an influx of second homes, vacation homes. Do you have any handle on kind of what percentage that might be, and is that changing?
I don't really have a handle on what the percentage is. One of the things you had sent along to me was recent statistics relative to how our market's doing right now. My initial comment to myself on that was very typical due to the residential statistics as opposed to the land-related statistics. But the second home market is certainly a huge part of our economy. And in Mount Washington Valley in North Conway area, and a few other areas around the state. So between second homes and the tourism market, it's a huge economic engine. Now, locally here around the lake, what we are seeing demographically, and part of this is because of our tax advantages and some who are getting older, is that those who have had second homes, when they retire, they move here to establish their residence. Now, whether they stay here 12 months a year or not is a different story, but they move here to establish residency, take advantage of those tax benefits. And so we do see a shift in demographics, and we are one of the oldest states in the union demographically.
Yeah, the United States Census Bureau that I pull estimates that the population of New Hampshire is about 1.359 and change million. That was effective July 1, 2019, and about 3.28% increase since 2010. So you guys are gathering more population up there, and I think with what's going on in the country, you're probably going to see some more, especially coming out of the Boston area, which is commutable, right? You can commute to Boston from where you are. Southern New Hampshire?
I can be in Boston in 2 hours.
Right. So
I'm in the middle of the state.
Yep.
So you're absolutely right. The southern tier of the state, there are a large number of people who commute into Boston. So our second home market extends into New York City, Philadelphia even, and, of course, from all over,
right,
all over the world, really. Those are predominant areas where we draw from.
The Bureau of Economic Analysis estimates that New Hampshire's total state production in 2018 was as close as I could get, was around 86 building, ranking you about 40th in the United States. And the median household income in 2017 was around $75,000, about the fourth highest in the country. So, I mean, you got some daggum good jobs up there, evidently.
That's an interesting but somewhat misleading statistic. And always have caution with statistics, but again, we've got that second home market, and as people start to declare residency up here, they're coming out of economies that are much higher numbers,
right,
shall we say? You
yeah.
know, incomes are higher and whatever. They move into our state, and they affect our statistics. Certainly, we have a full range of economy up here. It's not as if we're anything elite or anything of that nature. We have quite a tourism industry which demands a large service sector as well, and so we battle affordable housing issues for sure. And you're absolutely right that with current conditions, you have quite a demand looking for areas where folks can feel sure that they can get away from the city, have a place where they can be comfortable and low density.
Yeah, your economic bureau again talks about its agricultural outputs are dairy products, nursery stock, cattle, apples, and eggs. And, of course, in your machinery, electrical equipment, rubber, plastic products, and, of course, tourism is your major. And it's showing that your medium sales price income is of July 2020, I did get a more current one, is $340,000. It's your mean sales price for your real estate. And
right.
Once again,
let's be sure we remember that we have quite a bit of waterfrontage and second homes, and those certainly affect the median prices of properties. So we run a very broad range in market values there.
Yeah, and to Teresa's observation, you're number third ranked overall in public safety and first in lowest property crime since 2018. So, again, with what's going on around the country, sounds like this is a good – let's go, Teresa.
Sounds great.
You want to go with us?
Sure.
Okay.
And it says here they have clam chowder.
Oh, they don't have clam chowder up there.
They said not only New England has clam chowder, but New Hampshire does as well.
Well, our guest today is Tom Howard. This is Let's Talk Land. Looking to sell your land, try LandHub.com. From 96 to 98, in that period of time, you were very involved with the Conservation Management Lake Region Conservation Trust in Meredith, New Hampshire. You had a lot of experience with that, and we want to learn about conservation. And maybe you've got a case study that will help us visualize it.
Sure. Yeah, as you can tell from my resume, I started with Parks and Recreation Management. That was my first career. While I was doing that, I came in touch with the Lakes Region Conservation Trust, who are doing a fundraiser for raise funds to a major island protection in Lake Winnipesaukee called Stone Dam Island. And one of their fundraisers was a canoe race on Meredith Bay on Winnipesaukee. And, of course, logistics of that were pretty expensive, and so as Parks and Recreation Director, they came to me to help them with the local logistics. Well, as they say, one thing leads to another, and I ended up serving the Lake Region Conservation Trust first on their stewardship committee, helping to install docks at Stone Dam Island once they acquired it, and then that led into me serving on their board of trustees for a period. At the same time, I was getting my real estate license. This is where the intersection came, because the Lake Region Conservation Trust is looking to acquire a piece of property in Alton, New Hampshire. It's called the Trask Swamp. And so it gets to the old real estate joke about wanting to buy some swamp land. this was a beautiful, large wetland complex, but the surrounding uplands was stated to be a 45-lot subdivision. Well, the wetland complex and the fragility of that, including a blue heron rookery, would have been devastated by having 45 houses built around it. So the Lakes Region Conservation Trust was very interested in protecting it, and they enlisted my help to negotiate their acquisition. Well, it became an extremely large fundraising effort on their behalf, but from a real estate perspective, it was really interesting. Because along with their fundraising, one of the things that happened was a donor of theirs made a donation of a lakefront on a lakefront building parcel on Lake Winnipesaukee, which had a very, as you can imagine, large value at the time. Well, we were able to use that as a target for the seller to do a 1031 exchange. So part of the transaction became a 1031 exchange for the seller. And at the same time, they used that. The Conservation Trust was able to utilize and leverage the value of that lakefront property in a very creative way to get the project done. So that's just an example of when I talk about conservation real estate. Sometimes I'm dealing with properties that already have conservation restrictions in place, such as a conservation easement deed. But sometimes I'm working on projects that have the natural resource values, but no protection yet. And while the market's not perfect, I try to help affect those projects toward an outcome where very often we have multiple outcomes, but most importantly is protecting the natural resources that make it so valuable in the first place. Whether it might have limited development attached to that, that's sometimes an outcome. Sometimes the outcome is an outdoor recreational, hunting cabin or something of that nature. So when I say New Hampshire Conservation Real Estate, we really get involved with a broad range of activities.
So there's some tax advantages of putting your property. You can still own the property, but put it in an easement, conservation easement. And, of course, that's forever and a day once you do that. And when you talk about easements and restrictions, those can be tailored all kinds of ways to fit whatever the goal is in protecting the property. I mean, you can even have a timber tract and put it in a conservation, but if you have a licensed forester that certifies the forest and says this amount of part of the timber or all the timber needs to be cut during this period of time, you know, you can still harvest your timber and benefit from that. But can you talk a little bit about some of the federal and state tax credits that are involved in an easement? Because people need to know about that. and you can still own your own property.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's another three or four shows there, Lou.
I understand. You're welcome to come back.
but absolutely, there are tax advantages to be had. If landowners are interested in doing a conservation project and they have the financial capability to make donation of a part or entirety of that conservation value, and they're looking at some potential income tax deductions.
And that's not a one-time deal. It's actually you take those deductions for multiple years, right?
Well, you do have to maximize them in a given year, but you can carry over if your charitable deduction is larger than you're able to utilize in a single year. You have a period of years to use it. You're absolutely right. From a property tax standpoint, typically we don't see an advantage because usually those lands are already enrolled in our tax program called Current Use. I know you talked with the boys from Maine about their current use statutes up there. Ours is structured a little bit differently, but the same concept. Yeah. That is, if you're not using your land for something for an intensive use, it's charged at much lower rates for property tax.
Right. We have something.
The point being is, a lot of these lands have already taken advantage of that current use, low value. So by putting the easement on it, you're not really changing anything. However, if it had not been in current use, then you would gain because now your land is going to be taxed at those much lower rates based on the fact that it has a conservation easement on it. You hit the mark as far as still utilizing your property for forestry and agriculture in particular. Those are the two commercial activities that are typically called out specifically as being allowed within a conservation easement, such that you can now manage your forest and you can plant your crops or raise your cattle or whatever your agricultural pursuit might be. And so those would be your basic tax.
So what are the type of people that's looking for putting easements on their property? For example, you know, you might be an heir, a widow, an heir to a land tract, and you've got grandchildren that's going to inherit it, but you want to protect it because you don't feel like they're going to take care of it for various reasons. You might want to put it in that would be one example. What's other examples?
Yeah, well, that's the best example, and just let me take off with that one because you're absolutely right that conservation easements don't usually come without some heartstring attached to the land. The conservation groups that are out here looking to help people protect land don't sit on a big bag of money. When they need to buy something, they need to fundraise for it. So very often they're looking for the landowners to pitch in some way, whether it's a complete donation or whether it's a partial donation. So, as you talked about heirs, and maybe the heirs won't take care of it in the same manner, and that is very often an impetus for the landowners to do that. Sometimes it's from a community aspect, so if people are very engaged in their community, and we often see this happen, is the neighborhood starts to, you know, a couple of landowners decide to do some conservation, and it catches on because there's a little bit of leverage going on within your community. And so that can happen as well. You know, so short of an outright sale, and the outright sale does happen. If you have an extraordinary conservation product sell, then you can find people who are willing to ante up to purchase.
Yeah, one thing that we probably see there as well here is a personal group would put their property into an easement, take advantage of the tax advantages, and then after a bit of time put it up for sale on the market. But sometimes we see they want to sell it as if the conservation easement was already there. They've already taken that money, but they want to try to price that into their listing price, which I don't think is fair. And of course, you'd kind of be.
Well, you either read my article or have had a life experience, because you're absolutely right. I call that the cake and eat it too seller. Wants to either take the tax advantages or get paid for the easement, and then 5 years later wants full market value. But that is an important thing for people to recognize, whether they're buying or selling. If there is an easement involved, it does have an economic impact on the value, and that can vary greatly depending upon the easement terms and the property itself, what it offers for highest and best value. But extraordinarily, we're also seeing trophy buyers, and I say trophy buyers because they have the wherewithal to pay full market value, and so they see the easement, but they are okay with the fact that they're going to pay a premium because, to quote, I wasn't planning to develop it anyway. And so they're willing to pay that price. So that begins to affect overall appraisal over the course of time, as you know, because when an appraiser goes back and looks at that sale, they say, well, why wasn't the easement taken into consideration? But that's why they call appraisal art and science.
It is an art and science. I actually did a class for the North Carolina Board of Appraisers called Rural Land Value. Is it an art or a science? It was a four-hour seminar that one of my appraiser buddies that teaches for the board invited me, after taking my four-hour class, to write the land part. Of course, he did the appraisal side, but the title was Rural Values. Is it an art or is it a science? And, you know, sometimes it's both, but it's really just an opinion.
Same language.
Exactly. Tell us about the different types of conservancy organizations. Are they nonprofit? Are they for-profit? Are they corporations? Are they a group of individuals? Or all of the above? Or none of the above?
Now, typically when we're talking about conservation easements, we are talking about nonprofits, because part of the tax code is the fact that the organizations that hold the responsibility in ad infinitum to ensure that these easements are enforced have to be 501c3 entities with the major purpose of conservation of nature. So it is most often either a nonprofit or a governmental agency. So I deal quite a bit with governments at all levels, local conservation commissions, state agencies, federal agencies. I've worked with and county agencies, so I've worked with all levels of governmental agencies, because they also are allowed within the tax code those organizations, qualified organizations, is what they call them.
Are these salary people, or if they're governmental, they're employed by the government entity they're in, but if they're private?
Yeah, for the most part. For the most part, the larger nonprofits are fully staffed, so they're being paid. And that's funny, because sometimes working as a real estate broker, as you know, we don't get paid till the very end, while all these other guys are getting paid on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's neither here nor there.
Sure, of course.
And as you say, the governmental employees, of course, are being paid. But some of the smaller land trusts, localized land trusts are working with largely volunteer boards, and so sometimes these volunteers who are helping to manage the projects are volunteers, but very typically have some professional background that makes them qualified to do it.
Sure. And some of these, and going back to your trophy properties, some of these are some of the unique estates. You know, they're several hundred years old, maybe King Grant's before the country was established, like I said, just historic properties that a lot of the families that are, you know, well off, they don't need the money, but they want to protect the property. So that's another group that looks for the conservation environment. Are you seeing
that? Yeah, I would... I do have a sample of that, if you've got a couple of minutes for me to tell it.
Go for it.
Yeah, so Harry Thompson was a Native American who moved to Tamworth, New Hampshire in the 1950s. And he planted corn, and he established a farm on about 20 acres of farmland on the Bear Camp River, some of the very best soils in New Hampshire, because our only good soils for agriculture really are around the rivers. But his family came to me about 3 or 4 years ago, and Harry had passed on, and his last wish of the family was that they retain the farm as a farm. So they did some research, figured out how the best way to go about it was, decided to put an easement on it, and then searched for a real estate broker. And fortunately for me, both the local land trust and the local conservation commission both pointed towards me, New Hampshire Conservation Real Estate. So I got in touch with the family, and I helped them to work with the organizations to do the conservation easement. And at the same time, we put the property on the market for sale, because there were reasons that they really needed to cash out as soon as they possibly could. But we made it clear that there would be an easement in place. So don't see that very often, that we're doing both parts of the project at the same time, but once in a while it happens. And what I like to tell people is, if you're planning to do that, then you probably better work with me.
Absolutely.
Not every broker is going to be able to do both at the same time. But the end result, of course, was that it got conserved. Now, in that case, as I mentioned before, and you've said, there are many ways to structure an easement. In this case, they reserved one single house site besides the site the existing house was on. And by the time I did the market analysis on what the value of the easement was going to be, it was small enough that the family decided to not sell the easement because they would incur many expenses that they wouldn't otherwise, and that they would not seek the charitable deductions on their income tax. Now, in that case, here you had a 28-acre farm, and by putting the easement on it, it only changed the value, in my opinion, of roughly $50,000. So by the time they figured out what their costs were going to be, if they did pursue the charitable deduction, meaning an IRS-level appraisal and everything according to that, they decided that they would just make the donation outright. But what it did is it lowered the value of that farm just enough that there was a local farmer who said, I can afford that, and he stepped onto the property and immediately started farming. In fact, the closing was an October closing. They made a side arrangement that the owner-to-be could get on that land early and get a cover crop so that it would be ready the next spring. And on my way to the closing in October, I went by the farm, and the cover crop was coming up green. So it was just a happy ending to a great story.
There you go. We love happy endings, don't we, Teresa?
Yep.
You got any questions, Teresa? You're learning anything? What are you learning, Teresa?
That I don't want to mess with conservation easements.
Why not? Teresa.
They sound complicated.
We're going to send you up to Tom's, and you're going to spend.
I'm going to have to get educated.
You're
going to
spend the summer up there with
I
him.
I think this is a whole lot more than 30 minutes can teach me.
I said you're going to spend the summer.
That's what I said. I'd have to go spend the summer.
Tom will invite you up there,
to New Hampshire for the summer. It sounds great.
Well, I mentioned that previously about the class I teach, and every time I teach the class on conservation easement basics, I know that I'm teaching my competition, and. I have actually had cases that 2 weeks after I gave the course, I lost the competition for a listing to a broker who had just taken my class. But she was local, and that's exactly the reason
exactly.
We were doing the class. Couldn't be upset by it. And at the same time, I've had brokers who took the class, made the comments that Terry just said, and referred people to me, knowing that if they really needed someone who had that specialized knowledge, they needed to talk to me.
I get a lot of referrals from my students and from teaching since 2003, especially my four-hour class now. Even though they've taken a little basic four-hour class, you know, there's just so much to this land business. I mean, I learn constantly stuff I've never heard of, and I've been doing this like you, Tom, not quite as long, but there's so many. That's why we got this show. Rodney, when I first started, he says, you want to do a 30-minute show or an hour show? I said, well, hell, I teach a 16-hour, two-day course, one of 10 courses, and it doesn't even cover everything. There's no way. So now we're up to, I think you're number 116 or 17, I can't remember, shows that we've done so far, and we're still scratching the surface. With about 7 or 8 minutes left, I wanted to learn a little bit more about, and this is a different angle on conservation, the Society of Protection, the New Hampshire Forest Organization, says protecting New Hampshire landscapes have been driving force behind Forest Society since it began in 1901. The land conservation ethic is deeply rooted in protecting the state's most important landscapes while promoting the wise use of its renewable natural resources. Maintaining this balance has made the Forest Society one of the most effective land conservation organizations in the country, partnering with the public agencies and communities and private organizations to protect over 1 million acres in our first century. So what's been your involvement with the society, Tom?
Well, I've been, it's a very similar story to my Lakes Region Conservation story, in that I went to work for them actually on staff between the years, in 1998, we had a severe ice storm that devastating to our forest here. And something I haven't mentioned and kind of gets overlooked and shouldn't is that the forest products industry is huge in New Hampshire. It's over a $1 billion industry. And so at that time, they were able to add land staff because they wanted to give assistance to landowners who had been injured by the ice storm. Their properties had been damaged severely. So I worked at the Forest Society during a four-year period. And in the year 2001, at the Society, I had an opportunity to work with some of the most important conservation people in not just New Hampshire, but I would say the United States. They're all very well-known people. But the Forest Society, as you said, long history since 1901. They were involved with the establishment of the White Mountain National Forest. They were involved with when the state highway system wanted to put four lanes through the Franconian Knot. Were instrumental in seeing that was made into a parkway. I believe it's one of the only, if not the only, parkway within the interstate system. So it's a very strong organization, and at that time they were working on a blueprint for the next however many years to protect next 1 million acres, as you just said. And that project was called New Hampshire Everlasting. I was fortunate to be working at the Forest Society at the time, so I got to play an important role as one of the sounding board staff members in that project. And it came out with a proposal that many communities in the state have picked up on, and it's been a very much a guiding document. So it's an organization that I now count among my clients. I represented them this spring in a cash asset sale. A landowner with a house on about 20 acres. Doesn't sound very big, but it was located in Durham, which is where the University of New Hampshire is located, down in the coast area. A very, very important residential area, very important conservation area surrounding the Great Bay of the Atlantic Ocean, which is in that area. What happened was the landowner donated the property to the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests. They, in turn, put the acknowledgement that it was used as a cash asset, meaning that he was aware that the organization would resell that property to support their conservation efforts in the Great Bay Area. So they acquired it through the gift. They turn around, they put an easement on it, such that the land could not be developed any further than the single house that was on it. And then I handled the marketing and resale because they understand that my knowledge of easements takes me a logical person to be able to explain what people can and cannot do with that land now. And that property, I think I only had to show it four times, and it was under contract within 3 days.
Wow.
And sold it above market value. So not an unusual story in those areas where we have a very voracious residential market, and certainly a college town that bill at this point. So the Forest Society has been very important in my history, and hopefully they could say the same thing about me.
Sure. And I'm sure you're available for consultation, and it doesn't have to be in New Hampshire. I'm sure you can consult or at least guide people like I do through RLI. For people that have it, questions and about conservation easements anywhere in the country, because it's pretty standardized, right?
Yeah, I would. I'd add the usual caveat.
No, you do. You're a very special person.
RSAs, but from the general concepts, absolutely. I have people referred to me by attorneys, by accountants, and certainly consulting is a part of my business day.
Thought so. Good to know. We'll make sure people are able to get in touch with you. With just a couple minutes left, and maybe just a minute, I did want to touch on the New Hampshire Cooperative Extension Agricultural and Natural Resource Business. Just in a nutshell, what's that about? And I know it's part of the university.
Yeah, well, the University of New Hampshire is a land-grant university dating back to Abraham Lincoln. And so the UNH Cooperative Extension Service is governmental arm of, and they provide a vast variety of services related to forestry, agriculture, home economics, very broad base. In my case, my direct involvement, part of my forestry education came several years ago, attending a workshop called the Granite State Forest Workshop. Something along that line, and woodlot management—that's what it was. And so I dealt extensively with their forestry educators in devising some of these projects that you've seen on my resume for education of real estate professionals in areas of forestry, and most recently, of course, the conservation easement basics. So. That's the UNH Cooperative Extension is a great, great service to landowners in the state.
Tom, you're a perfect guest, and I tell you, we're going to have to get you back on because you got a wealth of knowledge. Tell us how they get in touch with you and your company, your website, your phone number if you want to give it out. Now, we'll put that on the letstalkland.net website, your show, after it's broadcast today. But we do not put phone numbers on any of our guests, but we do put your email address. So how do they get in touch with you, Tom?
Sure. The email address is tomhoward@n8conservationre.com.
Do it one more time.
And what?
Do it one more time for me.
Yes, Tom Howard. TOMHOWARD at NH as in New Hampshire Conservation RE as in real estate .com.
Perfect. All right. Thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to suggest, we would appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or comments as well. This show is for the public, and most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source of land education, and that's all of you, most of you. All shows are downloaded after the show today on our master website, www.letstalkland.net. Also, you can find us on Podbeam and Spotify. Teresa, how do they get in touch with you?
They can email me at Teresa, teresa.mylandpro@gmail.com, or give me a call, 336-209-2937.
And my email is Lou, L-O-U, at mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. And we'd like to thank our sponsor, LandHub.com, or are you looking to buy or sell land? Landhub.com previews thousands of properties nationwide. That's landhub.com. Rodney, how do they get in touch with us here?
Well, they can go to our website, Lou. They can go to WKTE1090.com, and also they can download the Simple Radio app.
Simple? Is it that simple?
It is simple. Simple.
Wow. And they can hear us anywhere?
In the world and the universe.
Oh, we added the universe now.
Yeah. Well, that's maybe helpful. Mars, you know.
But, well, that's in the universe.
They sent something up there, didn't they?
Yeah, so they did.
Maybe they'll let us know if they can
hear
you.
So we're a beach music and oldie station.
That's right.
And we only play what, Teresa?
Happy music.
That's right. See how happy Teresa was saying that? Saying she even got the giggles.
We won some nice awards.
Yes, 5 years in a row being the top radio station on the East Coast.
So even New Hampshire?
I guess that's included.
The East Coast.
Yeah,
well,
that's
East Coast, right there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you got a nice award.
Yeah, the 2000 Readers' Choice Award for Announcer of the Year.
Wonderful.
Yes. Well, I guess I'll be in the running maybe this year. Keep your fingers crossed.
Which
you
one?
Might win it.
Teresa will before me.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe Shadow will
get it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. Hey, stay tuned for Dr. Barbie.